Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're exploring a framework to help you navigate your world more safely, maybe more confidently. It's the GMO Avoidance Ladder. The whole mission here, well, it's helping you prepare for the best kind of fight, the one you never actually have to attend. You know, think about just stepping out of your apartment. Maybe you're scrolling on your phone, totally lost in thought, and you bump into someone. Or maybe you're at the grocery store, distracted, and you nearly miss seeing a kid dart out. Minor stuff, right? But it highlights something important. When we're not paying attention, we're just less aware, potentially more vulnerable. But what if you could actually project the sense of awareness so clearly that it helps deter trouble before it even begins? Guiding us today is Mickey Mitto, retired U.S. Air Force Security Forces senior NCO, founder of Gray Matter Opsis. His framework, Tactical Civility, is all about using that awareness, using strategy to proactively manage your safety.
Yeah, and it's not just theory. These aren't just ideas. They're based on principles that have shown real results. For example, look at law enforcement training that uses similar concepts. A randomized stepped wedge evaluation of PRF's ICAT training in Louisville found 28% fewer use of force incidents, 26% fewer citizen injuries, and 36% fewer officer injuries after ICAT training. So what we're talking about today are essentially the civilianized versions of those core ideas. It's about avoiding the situation completely.
That's significant validation. So for us, just regular folks, what's the biggest mental block, you think, to actually using these ideas when things feel tense?
Often it's twofold. Lack of practiced awareness, maybe. And honestly, a reluctance to trust that gut feeling. We're often conditioned, you know, be polite, don't make waves. But your safety sometimes means you have to break that social script, which is why the absolute foundation, the first step on the GMO avoidance ladder, is what we call the observer effect.
The observer effect. Okay, what does that actually mean, like in practice, for personal safety?
Think of it like this. Carriage before content. It's not just what you see, but how you appear to others. Your visible alertness, how you carry yourself, there's a deterrent. A heads-up posture, purposeful gait, and phoned-down attention. That sends a message. It says, I'm aware. I'm not an easy target. Studies on how offenders choose targets. They show vulnerability can be read just from nonverbal cues, from how someone walks. So this first step, it isn't just about spotting trouble early, though it helps with that too. It's fundamentally about not getting selected in the first place.
Right. So your body language is basically broadcasting your level of awareness before a word is spoken. It's an outward sign of an internal state. And that's something anyone can start doing right now. Instead of just drifting through the day, actually practice it. Eyes up, walk with purpose, phone down, be present.
Exactly. It fundamentally changes how you might be perceived by someone looking for an easy mark. Makes you less attractive as a target. And importantly for you, it drastically improves your ability to see it early. Which is, well, crucial for everything else on the ladder.
Okay, so that improved awareness, that observer effect, naturally leads into the first active step on the ladder, right? Which is recognition. This is where your awareness actually flags something as, well, off. And you process it. You break this down into three parts. Baseline, anomaly, decision. Can you walk us through that?
Sure. So baseline, that's just what's normal for that specific time and place, the usual sound, sights, the general feel of things. An anomaly, then, is anything that deviates from that normal. Something there that shouldn't be, or maybe something missing that should be there. Then comes the really crucial part, decision. Making the conscious choice to act on that anomaly, and critically, not talking yourself out of that gut feeling. This concept has roots in things like the Marine Corps Combat Hunter Program, or the idea of left of bang. It boils down to baseline plus anomaly, decision. You see the picture change, you decide what to do.
That gut feeling. It's powerful, isn't it?
Yeah.
And context matters so much. Like you said, a parking garage feels different at night versus midday. That's a different baseline, different potential risks. Isolated ATMs, places right before closing time, entrances, exits. Those transitional spaces often have heightened risk, yeah?
Definitely. And we also need to look at group dynamics.
Yeah.
How are people interacting? Are there blockers seemingly trying to impede you? Drivers trying to steer you? People forming an encirclement? Multiple people acting in concert when that's not typical? These are anomalies compared to the baseline of people generally minding their own business.
And we can't forget the digital side these days. How does digital situational awareness fit into this recognition step?
It's just another layer of your environment, really. Think about limiting live location sharing on apps, choosing to meet someone new in a public, staffed place with cameras, letting someone know where you're going and when you expect to be back. Check-ins. It's recognizing how your digital trail could potentially create a vulnerability just like your physical presence can.
Okay, so we've tuned up our observer effect. We're getting better at spotting anomalies. Baseline plus anomaly equals decision. So when that decision is made, when something feels wrong, what's the ideal next move? That takes us to absence, right?
Exactly, absence. It sounds simple, maybe even obvious, but it's probably the most effective strategy there is. Just don't be there when things go bad. Your best fight is always, always the one you never attend. If you recognize the signs early and leave, you've already won.
Logically, yes, that makes perfect sense. But in the moment, that social pressure, wanting to be polite, not wanting to make a scene, how do you override that? How do you know it's time to just go?
That's where understanding pre-incident indicators, or PIS, is incredibly helpful. Gavin Debecker identified these behavioral red flags. Seeing these justifies leaving early, period. Social awkwardness doesn't matter when these pop up. Think about forced teaming. Someone instantly trying to create a we. Like, oh, we're going to figure this out. When you just met them, it's meant to lower your guard.
Ah, right. That false sense of connection.
Precisely. Or excessive charm or niceness. Seems odd, but sometimes it's overdone. You know, a tool to disarm you. Too many details. Someone over-explaining something simple. Why? Maybe they're trying too hard to convince you. Typecasting. Oh, you seem too smart for that. Or you're not rude, are you? Using labels to manipulate. Loan sharking offering help you didn't ask for, making you feel obligated. An unsolicited promise. So again, creating an obligation or expectation out of thin air. And maybe the biggest one, discounting no. You set a boundary, say no, and they just ignore it or push back. Huge red flag. It shows they don't respect your autonomy.
Those PNEs, they're like warning lights flashing on our social dashboard, which really underscores the need for what you call the pre-commit rule, making that decision ahead of time. If the baseline breaks, if a pin shows up, you leave. No debate, no second guessing. And we really have to stress this. Overcoming that social pressure is vital. Your discomfort, that gut feeling, way more important than avoiding a moment of awkwardness.
Absolutely. And this applies everywhere. Confined spaces. If an elevator feels wrong, step off at the next floor. Small venue. Know your exits before you need them. Public transport, change cars, move near staff if you feel uneasy, even in workplaces. Absence tactics there can mean using established reporting pads early for concerning behavior, setting and documenting clear boundaries, maybe arranging buddy walkouts after hours, staying vigilant for those threat cues that suggest something is escalating. Your safety is just not worth forcing yourself through a situation that feels wrong.
And having a few simple exit microscripts ready can really help in those moments. Just neutral, polite, but firm ways to disengage. Things like, not for me, I'm heading out, or maybe, can't talk right now, deadline, or even just a clear, simple, no, I'm leaving now. Having those rehearsed makes acting on that pre-commit rule much easier.
Right. And this leads to a really important point. Phase failure, rapid switching. What happens if absence isn't possible right away? If you recognize the problem, but you just can't walk away that second. You have to be ready to mentally shift rapidly to the next stage on the ladder. There's no shame in that. Your plan A was absence. But if that fails, you immediately go to plan B. It's smart tactical thinking.
Okay, so if absence isn't an option, the situation is clearly escalated. Our next priority then becomes escape and evasion, E&E. And this ties directly into some widely recognized civilian response ideas people might have heard of, right?
That's correct. E&E aligns perfectly with established approaches like alerts, avoid, deny, defend, ADD model, and the FBI's run. Hide, fight principles. For civilians, the priority, whenever safe, is always geared towards getting away, towards evacuation. Avoid the threat, run if you can. And those core ideas inform the practical micro drills we recommend for E&E. Things you can practice mentally, or even physically sometimes, to build that muscle memory.
Let's walk through a few of those. First, the two exit scan. Simple idea. Whenever you enter a new space, just casually identify two ways out. Why?
Faster decisions under stress, you've already done the thinking.
Makes sense. Next, the cover index. Understanding the difference between cover and concealment.
Critically important. Cover stocks threats. Think brick walls, engine blocks, solid pillars. Concealment only hides you drywall, curtains, bushes. It won't stop bullets or impacts.
Got it. Cover stops, concealment hides, then there's pathing.
Right. Moving cover to cover if you have to move. And consciously avoiding funnels, narrow hallways, doorways where your options are limited and you're exposed. It reduces your exposure time.
Okay, practical drills. What about specific scenarios like vehicles or crowds?
For vehicle safety, try to pull through park so you can drive straight out. Keep doors locked. At stoplights, leave space maybe a tire width so you have maneuvering room. If you get blocked or your car is disabled, your priority might shift to abandoning the vehicle for hardcover nearby. Don't stay in a compromised car. In crowds, guidance from agencies like CISA, who look at things like vehicle ramming incidents, generally suggests moving with the flow of the crowd if possible, but always angling towards staffed exits or controlled areas. Don't get trapped in the middle.
And communications during E&E, if you can make a call.
If you can get to cover and it's safe, call 911, be ready with your location, best description you can give of any suspect, and their direction of travel. But, crucially, if staying on the line puts you at risk, disconnect. Your immediate safety comes first.
Okay. And again, that rapid switching idea comes back here, too.
Yes, always. If E&E isn't viable, if you can't run, can't hide effectively, you have to be prepared to shift again instantly to the next and final stage on the ladder.
Which brings us to the last resort, the final off-ramp before things potentially get physical.
Yeah.
De-escalation. And it's so important to frame this correctly. The goal here is not winning an argument. It's not negotiating. It's purely about creating a window to leave. It's proactive disengagement, using tactical civility. So what are the core principles?
We adapt principles from training like ICAT, but for civilian use. The goal is disengagement. We use time, trying to slow the interaction down. We use distance, trying to create or maintain space. We use available cover if possible. And we use very specific communication, keeping your palms visible if you can, using a calm, neutral tone, making one clear, simple request at a time, like, please step back, not a complex negotiation. The aim is simply to lower the emotional intensity, just enough to create that opportunity to break contact and exit safely.
And this feels absolutely critical. There are times when de-escalation is not the right move, right? When trying it could actually be dangerous. These are the failure indicators.
Absolutely critical. You must recognize when de-escalation is failing or inappropriate. Red lines include seeing a weapon combined with the aggressor closing distance, dealing with multiple aggressors who seem coordinated, or seeing clear pre-attack indicators, things like clenched fists, repetitive target glances, looking at where they might strike, bleeding their stance, turning sideways. If you see those, de-escalation is likely off the table. Your priority has to shift immediately back to E&E if possible, or preparing for self-defense if escape isn't an option. Recognizing that shift point is vital.
Let's just hammer that home one more time. The goal of de-escalation in this context is always about creating that window to disengage and leave. It's not about convincing someone, reaching an agreement, or winning. It's about safety and getting away.
Exactly. And to help you practice all these stages, we put together the GMO Weekly Challenge. It breaks it down week by week. Week one is PNDs and anomalies. Log two off cues daily, practice one exit line. Week two, focus on E&E baselines. Do that two exit scan and cover index everywhere. Make it automatic. Week three, work on de-escalation scripts. Reverse three simple neutral lines, thinking about posture and space. And by week four, you do a full rep. Mentally run through scenarios. Recognition, absence, E&E de-escalation.
That's great. Really practical steps. And if you take just one thing away today, maybe start with this. The two exit scan. Make it a habit. Every time you walk into a new place, coffee shop, office, store, whatever, just casually identify two ways out. It's a tiny shift, but it massively boosts your situational awareness over time. The real strength of the GMO avoidance ladder, I think, is how it empowers you. It gives you practical tools. It helps you move through the world with more confidence, more awareness, turning potential bad situations into non-events. It's not about fear. It's about having the power that awareness gives you. Explore more episodes and resources at redditmindset.com. Train the mind. Win the fight. Awareness is armor.